John Carlson is out today. He'll be back tomorrow. He does have some vacation time to use still, even though he is preparing for retirement. And that final show for John Carlson will be Friday, April 4th. But John's out today. He'll be back tomorrow. Good morning, everybody. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John's producer. You just heard the radio legend Mark Christopher there.
Morning.
So it's Mark and me this morning on Talk Radio 570 KVI. I was going to kick this off by saying we had a King County Superior Court judge ruling on Friday that has a whole lot of free market and conservative-leaning voters feeling exactly like President Trump does right now. I cannot win in court.
Confusion.
This is related to the voter-approved initiative I-2066. It passed last November. It was a statewide initiative about access to natural gas because Governor Jay Inslee and the majority Democrats in the Washington legislature had banned new natural gas hookups in businesses and new construction. Well, in homes and new construction. So if my house, I don't have natural gas, right?
I do. I've had the last three homes, right? And I was getting really worried that eventually we'd have to get rid of it and go back to electric, and you know what that cost would be.
My wife, who is as liberal as the day is long, who is as anti-Trump as the day is long, would love to be able to have natural gas in our house. But the couple of blocks that we're on, we're about a street or a street and a half over from where the natural gas line runs, where we live in North Seattle. And we tried to do the math on if we laid, you know, you could pay to have that natural gas line set up a block and a half away. And we were thinking maybe neighbors would join in on the cost or something like that. If we talked to some neighbors that they might be interested in doing that as well.
And that's usually
we never
protocol.
Did it. It would have been something like $60,000 to run the natural gas line from the street that's a block and a half away where it goes to get to our side of the street. And so we didn't bother. But my wife loves to cook and would love to be able to have a natural gas stove and oven for cooking. It would be fine for heating the home as well.
Well, the key to that, too, and I still have connection to a lot of restaurant people and chefs, their recipes are based on gas stove usage. They said it tastes totally different if they have to use an electric range.
One of the benefits of natural gas versus electricity on a stovetop for cooking is the change in the heat and the temperature is immediate. If you have an electric stove and it's on full blast and you turn it down because you need to brown something or crisp something and you turn it down, the electric heat, it stays hot for a whole lot longer. But if you're doing that on a natural gas flame, you turn that down, the heat dissipates quickly, and that affects everything that you're cooking. So the judge in King County ruled against Initiative 2066, saying it was unconstitutional, and it came back to this whole single subject rule that we had never heard of before until the Tim Iman Initiative on car tabs back in the 1990s. If you've lived around the state of Washington long enough, Tim Iman had run a bunch of initiatives over the years, but the first one that he really got off the ground and got to become a bit of a household name in the state of Washington was the $30 $30 car tabs, as our car tabs kept climbing up and up and up and up based on the manufacturer's suggested retail price and how the state was valuing those.
Yeah.
So that was where the $30 car tabs got knocked out. Even though they were approved by voters, and a judge had said, well, it violates the single subject rule in a statewide initiative. It has to have a single subject. And so it's aggravating and confounding on a couple of levels. One, why do we have initiatives that are getting to the ballot?
Good question.
If the authors of the initiative haven't limited it to that single subject. And I do believe I remember John Carlson talking to Brian Haywood, Let's Go Washington, Let's Go Washington was
behind
the
all
group
the initiatives.
That helped coordinate all of the signature gathering to promote and build the awareness for these initiatives to get them up on the ballot, which they ultimately did. And I believe that that came up of, hey, if this passes, and then the opponents, the Jay Inslee fanboys out there in Washington politics want to challenge any of these initiatives and say that they're unconstitutional, are these going to be able to withstand a constitutional challenge?
And many times with Haywood on here, he kept saying, just keep in mind when you vote, yes for less. You're going to want to say yes.
Pay less.
Because he feared, and John Carlson feared, sometimes these things get written up, whoever writes them up, and they're confusion. Yeah. And I told you guys, I was one of the first to get a ballot, and I said, I've been here every day. Yes for less, but the way it's written, it makes you sound like you should say no.
And this is another part of what this judge in King County on Friday, Superior Court Judge Sandra Woodland, ended up writing. She ended up saying that there was some confusion, basically. That the thing was too broad was one of the things that she wrote. Yeah. And if that's the case, then where does that put the state attorney general's office who writes the ballot title?
Oh, they do.
Right? It's the state attorney general's job to write the ballot title after the initiative is approved by the Secretary of State. And if I would submit that this caused confusion on some of the votes, the statewide initiative votes that did not pass. The one on the payroll tax that we're all forced to pay into for long-term care. That would be another example of how this relatively simple issue tended to confuse voters.
So many voted no, Phil, like many called in and told us, thinking that was the way to vote to make it all go away and give us control still. But it turned out, no, you had to vote yes. Yes. For less.
Yeah. So here's what I want to be able to tell you that's most significant about this court ruling that now knocks out and invalidates the passage of Initiative 2066, which is choice over natural gas. At 8:35 this morning, as Mark and I sit in for John Carlson, we're going to talk to one of the people who was instrumental in the campaign to get I-2066 on the ballot and then ultimately approved by voters. That would be your state chair of the Republican Party, Jim Walsh. He's also a state representative from Grays Harbor County. So Representative Walsh, Chair Walsh, he's going to join us at 8:35 this morning. So if you have things to do between now and then, I would wholeheartedly implore you to make sure that you're here at 8:35 so you can hear his thoughts on this, because this is going to get appealed. Now, the business industry, or pardon me, the building, what is it? The Building Industry Association of Washington, the BIAW. This would be the trade group for construction groups, construction companies, Building Industry Association of Washington. They have vowed to appeal. One of their spokespeople says that they feel that they will be vindicated on this if it gets to the state Supreme Court. And I kind of shuddered when I heard that reaction on Friday after this King County Supreme Court, or pardon me, King County Superior Court ruling. I don't understand how they would be more optimistic that a ruling would go their way at the state Supreme Court, given what we know about the state Supreme Court. And I have a constitutional question for Jim Walsh that will happen at 8:35, and that's why I think you need to be here. The King County judge's ruling says it's unconstitutional, and this would be now in line to go to the state Supreme Court, where the state Supreme Court basically created out of whole cloth a ruling that said a capital gains income tax is not income. And even though our state constitution prohibits an income tax, the state Supreme Court ignored all of that and decided to say that a capital gains income tax is not income. So the state Supreme Court has this history of kind of making stuff up out of whole cloth and ignoring stare decisis, previous court ruling. And they ended up allowing this patently unconstitutional capital gains income tax to become a law, even though it is in a blatant contradiction to the state constitution that says you cannot have a state income tax. And so that makes me wonder how the supporters of Initiative 2066, pardon me, that would allow for the natural gas choice in construction, think that they will prevail with the state Supreme Court. So, But that's why I think it's instructive to make sure that you're here at 8:35 for that interview with the state Republican Party chair and the state representative from Grace Harbor County, Jim Walsh, because he was one of the sponsors of Initiative 2066, which has now been invalidated.
And that's how we started the weekend. And again, I was given a list of items that went really just a busy weekend around the Northwest. The Carbon River, missing woman, still missing.
Hiker.
It was with the boyfriend, husband, the dog. They have not found her. We'll give an update on that. The NCAA Men's Tournament in Seattle. Oh, my gosh, Phil. Everybody, this town was so busy. It usually takes me 2 hours to get back to my home at Hood Canal. Took me four.
Wow. Were you trying to drive around or were you trying to get to the ferry?
No, I was working the ferry boats and they just suddenly got, you know, Saturday was a break from all the games. So everybody in town's like, let's check this out and explore Seattle. Hey, look at the ferries. I wonder where they go. Let's go and take the car here. Boeing with the contract here with the F-47. Wow, what a fighter. Air show appearance maybe at Seafair.
So let's give everybody some background. It was Friday, I think right as John Carlson was wrapping up the show.
Yeah.
The Trump administration announced that the new military contract for the next generation fighter jet will go to Boeing. It will be called the F-47 fighter. So that's what Mark is talking about here. But now you're saying at the Seafair Hydroplane Air Show in Seattle this summer, there potentially could be
I made a call over the weekend being a part of the Air Boss and Air Command and just said, what's the possibility? I said, Mark, you know what you're asking. And the Air Boss, Owen Ashurst, who's been with us many, many years, he goes, you know, they've been testing some prototypes or whatever. And I said, I heard that. And they've been doing that since 2020. So we've had prototypes around or whatever, you know, for about 6 years. But the whole thing... Think of everything Boeing's been through, what negativity we've had on the air of stories and jetliners and problems here and there. This contract could be the turnaround. And what better, since Boeing has, you know, major sponsorship of the air show at Seafair, and they always feature some kind of an aircraft on Sunday, the big grand finale for the hydroplane races and all the fun, to feature, like, hey, maybe we can just find one and fly it through Seattle to be the first to see it and just kind of, you know, okay, maybe a prototype, but still gives you an idea what's on the way here. Being the F-47, based on the 47th President of the United States, is where that idea came from here.
That would be a wild appearance if
it would be. And I know a lot of Boeing employees and upper management just let them know that, so I'm just kind of, you know, people are going, Mark. I go, hey, you got to just put the feather out there. We still got time. Let's just see what happens.
All right.
You never know here. Another one just want to bring up, too, the Ballard hit and run weeks ago out in Ballard here. The mom is frustrated and family.
Oh, this is at Market Street and 15th?
Busy intersection, as you know, once you get across the Ballard Bridge out there. Still no arrest in the case. The mom is frustrated, of course, losing her son. She's kicking in $5,000 now to lead to the arrest. You need some help. We got some audio from that.
The guy who was hit and killed is a younger guy. Is he in his 20s, I think, or late 20s, maybe early 30s? But he's from Arlington, but... had been in that part of Ballard, northwest Seattle. Hopefully, they have a suspect vehicle.
They have
it's a big full-size pickup truck.
Yep.
Somehow witness went accounts, flying pictures, into the kind of busy intersection there at 15th and Market.
And it's just frustrating, as we know. It's just been this thing of everybody, you know, suddenly hits something or a person and they take off. That's the worst thing you can do. Mm-hmm. Because right away it's like, guilty, and let's find out who this is. And you'll hear some of the comments when we have time here. From the mom who's just like, I don't get this. We got to find him on our own. So she's saying, community, can you help kick in?
Yeah.
Let's figure out where this driver is.
So 8:35, we'll get into this Initiative 2066 court ruling that the King County Superior Court judge invalidated a voter-approved initiative. So much for democracy in the state of Washington. But we'll do that at 8:35. At 7:35, did Jerry Seinfeld predict the travails that Democrats would have in 25, and did he make this prediction back in 1990? I've got some proof that Jerry Seinfeld knew exactly what the Democrats would be up to in the year 2025 when he had some stand-up comedy that he did back in 1990. And then with Lars Larson coming up at 6:52 this morning when we get Lars on the phone, we'll talk about the Court of Appeals hearing that is today on the Trump deportation flights. And so this is the appeal of the judge a week or so ago that said Trump could not send illegal aliens who had potential gang ties or did have gang ties to international gangs or national gangs in foreign countries that they could not send those illegal aliens on deportation flights. So we'll check in with Lars about that coming up at 6:51. At 7:04 this morning, we've got a guest interview about the current state of transportation in Washington. And this is the Washington Policy Center's Charles Prestrud, and he's kind of the transportation policy analyst over there. He's going to talk to us about the latest evaluation of transportation systems in Washington, and not a lot of good news in there. So that's why I want you to be here at 7:04 for that interview about the status of transportation systems here in Washington. One of the things they've noticed is the drop in mass transit ridership. But is there a possible change coming in the level of mass transit ridership that we've got? I think there might be. I'm going to ask the transportation policy director at the Washington Policy Center, Charles Prestrud, about that. And then we need to give away some money today.
I was just looking at you to see if we have a Noah Carlson away to Philip J. and Mark Christopher. Still have the Golden Age giveaway, and we'll have a word for them this morning.
So the way this works is you have four chances to enter today. The first chance to enter to win $2,025 comes up at 8:04. I will give you today's 8:04, the 8:04 hour keyword for the 8 o'clock hour. You'll have until 9 o'clock this morning to text it. But at 8:04, I'll give you that keyword. We'll give you a couple more keywords, one at 11 o'clock, one at 1 o'clock with Lars Larson, another one at 4 o'clock with our afternoon host, Ari Hoffman. That gives you four chances to enter to win the drawing today.
Different words each time.
Exactly. So you got to listen at 8 o'clock here on The Carl Show, 11 o'clock during Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins, 1 o'clock with Lars Larson, 4 o'clock with Ari Hoffman. You hear each one of those keywords, different keywords each one of those times. You text in that keyword only, you're going to be entered to win. And then later today, at the end of the day, we'll draw somebody's name out of a hat. We're doing this in conjunction with our other Lotus sister stations around Seattle and then around the country as well. But mostly these are stations in California and a couple in Idaho and Arizona and Utah. And then I think Florida.
Percentage is good. You'll be aware here. And when you do text, you're just texting the word. Don't say your name or where you live. Just do the word. That's all it takes to enter the contest for each time. And like Phil said, different word at the four times we have the contest today. And you can enter all four times to gain your chance to win. And the money giveaways every day?
Yep, exactly. So we're doing this into April. So you're going to have chances to win every day, which is why you should be starting your day with the John Carlson Show here, The Commute with Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, up next, I've got an update on stolen cars in Puget Sound. You know, we've had problems with stolen cars. I have some good news about the latest numbers on auto theft, stolen cars here in Puget Sound. We'll tell you about that next in the social media sweep as Mark Christopher and I, Phil Vandervoort, sit in for Carlson here on Monday morning, April 24. John's just out today. Pardon me, did I say April? It should be March. March 24.
April, I got my taxes to do, Phil. Exactly. Whoa.
We would all be way late on that. March 24, John will be back tomorrow. John's just taking the day off to make it a 3-day weekend. And we'll continue the rest of the week with John. So Mark Christopher and I taking it up to 9 o'clock this morning with Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins. Time for the social media sweep here on The Commute with Carlson, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. As I indicated before the break, we've got some good news about car thefts in Washington State. They are now at the lowest point in 15 years. I'm looking at a post by King 5 News here in Seattle, but the King 5 story cites the Puget Sound Auto Theft Task Force, and they shared the latest theft data from the month of February, and it says the graph with the year-to-date figures show that we're at the lowest level of stolen cars since 2010. Through the end of February, there are 3,346 car thefts, so we're still at 3,300 plus car thefts from January and February across the state of Washington. That number represents a sharp decline from just a few years ago, according to King 5, when there were more than 8,000 car thefts at the similar point into February in the year 2022.
Isn't that just amazing to hear that number?
But again,
unbelievable.
Yeah, after our state legislature illegalized police officers chasing suspect vehicles in car thefts, that's when car thefts exploded. It took a statewide initiative to force the state legislature to restore the those police pursuit criteria. But lo and behold, now that those police pursuit criteria have been restored, what do you know? All of a sudden, stolen cars and car thefts are way, way, way down, back to the lowest point since 2010.
And you were always asking, too, every time we heard of some kind of a car breaking in and smashing into a store and a theft, how many times you would say, okay, was it stolen? And the answer,
like a smash and grab.
Yeah.
Exactly. Almost every time it's a stolen car that's used at a smash and grab to break into a convenience store, get an ATM, a pot shop to get an ATM, to get cannabis, whatever else they've got inside the cannabis store, and then they ditch that stolen vehicle that they used to smash into the building, and they take off in another stolen vehicle.
Yeah, the challenges too with insurance companies is like, is that covered, or is it just, no, we're going to just total it, and this is all your blue book is, and it, like, that's all I get?
Over the weekend, George Foreman, Olympic gold medalist, boxing, heavyweight champion in boxing, passed away at the age of 76. Mike Tyson posted on social media condolences to George Foreman's family. His contribution to boxing and beyond will never be forgotten. Another sports-related handle on social media, legendary boxer George Foreman passed away at age 76. Two-time world heavyweight champion, Olympic gold medalist.
In his 20s.
As an Olympic gold medalist.
Oh, sure. The heavyweight champ belt in his 20s. And I remember the TV coverage as a kid. He went against Frazier, Muhammad Ali, Holyfield. He had a fight with Holyfield.
Right,
And then he's like, okay, I'm going to retire, and got a great idea for a grill, Phil.
Right. He was an entrepreneur. He was a preacher. He, in the 1960s to 1970s, was in that legendary class of heavyweights, Ken Norton, Larry Holmes, Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali, and, of course, George Foreman, Michael Buffer, the ring announcer that everybody knows from the Let's Get Ready to Rumble line. And Michael Buffer writes, I'm totally heartbroken with news of my dear friend of more than 35 years, George Foreman, passing away. I'm finding it difficult to deal with. Somebody else commented and said, heartbreaking news about the passing of George Foreman, a man whose legacy transcends boxing. Big George was not only a two-time world heavyweight champ, Olympic gold medalist, but also a symbol of resilience, reinvention, and kindness. His journey from a fierce competitor to a beloved global icon inspired millions. Rest in peace, champ. Your impact will never be forgotten.
In the hospital on Friday, family was at his side.
Okay, if people haven't seen the documentary of the Rumble in the Jungle, the fight in Zaire called When We Were Kings, I highly recommend that. That is the Muhammad Ali, George Foreman. It essentially became the movie version of Ali. I think it was called Ali, with Will Smith playing Muhammad Ali. But it is a dynamite documentary from the 1990s. And if you have any appreciation whatsoever of the heavyweight boxing from the 60s to the 70s, I'm sure you will enjoy When We Were Kings. John Carlson will be back tomorrow, everybody. Good morning. I'm Phil Vandervoort. There's Mark Christopher. We're taking over for John this morning, but he'll return tomorrow. We'll put it all back to normal then. The state legislature last week, Democrats in the majority, the state legislature unveiled their plans for tax hikes because they have overspent. But you wouldn't know that from most conversations in Seattle media, I guess, unless... you know, you're listening to us here on KVI between Ari Hoffman in the afternoon, Lars Larson from noon to three, and John Carlson here in the morning. I came across this clip that was actually posted by a former state senator who essentially will go on King 5 News and speak on King 5 about what's happening in the state legislature. This is Reuven Carlisle. Reuven Carlisle has been one of the backers of the Climate Commitment Act and things like that. He's a Seattle Democrat, former state senator, and... here he is. This is, again, he posted this clip of his 4-minute interview from King 5 late last week, talking about what's going on down in the state legislature. Here's his explanation of what's been happening in the state legislature as Democrats are now getting ready to make this final push for a bunch of tax hikes again. Is this thing not going to queue up for me? Let's try this one more time.
The Republicans have been arguing for a long time that Democrats have been overspending. Mm-hmm. Democrats have said we've got inflation, we've got demand on public services. So very unlikely that we're going to see consensus on taxes.
Woo. There's some breaking opinion. Republicans and Democrats might not be able to agree on hiking taxes again in the Olympia legislature. I mean, Republicans have been pointing out how excessive taxes have been raised to the point where Democrats keep spending money that they don't have. So there's some of the monumental insight of Reuven Carlisle on the state legislative situation right now. And then Joyce Taylor asked this really uninformed question about where we are with this budget shortfall, which is the tremendous amount of money the Democrats want to spend and the amount of revenue that the state actually has. And this all revolves around the Democrats announcing last week that they want to raise taxes on the rich. But over here, we're going to drop the state's sales tax by about 0.5%. That's what the Democrats have proposed, that all these years they've complained about regressive taxes. Now maybe they'll consider cutting the state sales tax by 0.5%. But listen to this exchange.
And then what do you make of this idea of reducing the state sales tax by 0.5%?
You know, it's interesting. We have a sales tax, we have property taxes, and of course we have the business taxes. So the levers of how they all interact is tough. We're a very high sales tax state. So it's a novel idea. I think it's a tough sell when you look at the reality of a $13 to $15 billion deficit to also include a reduction in the sales tax. It's great in theory, it's just tough to actually pull off.
So a couple of things going on with this. This is just like banging your head against the wall to have to listen to this. Joyce Taylor could have done a whole lot more. I don't know who is helping formulate segments on King 5, but they could have done a whole lot more to present and point out to Reuven Carlisle that all of this budget mess in Olympia revolves around Democrats' chronic overspending. But that doesn't come up at all. And then Reuven Carlisle goes, why, you know, that's really difficult to ask to cut a sales tax when we need this much money or when we want to spend this much money in the Olympia legislature. And he's talking about the system, the tax rates that we have right now in the state that he is complicit in installing. He was a state senator until this time last year. He did not run for re-election back in November when we had the presidential election and the governor's election. He did not run for re-election. But he was there a year ago, and he was there in the sessions before that produced this horrendous tax structure, tax rate system that we have in this state. And he can't even acknowledge that he's complicit in it. And then that brings us to a state senator, Noelle Frame. And I think we played this clip last week on John's show, but this would be a good time to repeat it because the Democrats have been complaining about, oh, we have such a regressive tax system with the state sales tax, the reliance on the state sales tax. You're the ones that keep allowing the sales tax to go up and up and up. And I'll stipulate it's not necessarily the state's portion of the sales tax that goes up. My understanding is that that hasn't gone up in a while, but they keep allowing different jurisdictions like the city of Tacoma, the city of Linwood, the city of Seattle, and other local municipalities, local taxing districts, to increase that state sales or their portion of the sales tax. It goes to the city, but it's still a sales tax that we all end up having to pay. But listen to this state senator from Seattle, Noelle Frame, and this was from last week at the Democrats' press conference, the day they unveiled their big tax hike package to address this $13, $12, $10, $14 billion in overspending that they want to spend.
It's going to allow us to honor our commitments to our communities and keep our promises to our kids while modernizing our tax code that's nearly a century old, does not reflect our current economy, and does not reflect our current realities.
The current realities that the Democrats have managed to pass and impose, and complaining about this century-old tax system. Democrats have been in control for 25, 30 years here. And just like the clip before, Reuven Carlisle refused to admit that we're in the middle of these problems. They're complaining about the very system they created. And, you know, it would have been nice to hear Joyce Taylor push back on that a little bit in the King 5 clip. But I think this is how we ended up in the current situation we have. And it's also how we ended up with three of these statewide initiatives being rejected by voters last November. We're talking about the long-term care tax, payroll tax that everybody has to pay, that we didn't have solid explanations of this in the majority of local news coverage leading up to last fall's election. And I think those are some examples of exactly what we're talking about here. One other local story that caught my attention. This was late last week. After neighbors in Renton's Fairwood neighborhood or Fairwood area are still upset about traffic safety and speeding drivers a year after there was a fatal crash that killed a mom and three kids. The speeding driver ran a stoplight, killing all of four of them. This is in the area around Petrovitsky, just out past, I think it's past the Renton city limits. So this story illustrates the inconsistent ways that officials in King County are willing to approach public safety programs, or public safety problems, I guess, to be more specific, how they inconsistently approach these public safety problems with political solutions. Listen to Como 4's Denise Whitaker. She talked to one of the neighbors there in Renton that's concerned with these traffic problems.
Has anything changed in the last year that this road and this area is any safer?
No. I actually think the road is more unsafe.
That, she says, is because the volume continues to rise with more housing developments going in. King County lowered the speed limit from 40 to 35 miles per hour and added plastic barriers to slow drivers entering the left turn lane on 140th.
The county knew that it was a hot spot. They knew that there was accidents weekly in this intersection. They neglected to do anything about it.
Robertson wants to see cement medians, narrow lanes, or better yet, a roundabout. I asked King County and the Target Zero Task Force exactly what safety measures they've studied. Target Zero tells me this area has been identified as a critical zone due to problematic driving behaviors, the number of crashes caused by speed and impairment. They secured a $125,000 grant to help reduce speeding, deaths, and injuries, but that money cannot be used for any engineering or mechanical updates.
The roundabout is the safest way to go.
Target Zero, instead of physical changes to the roadway, will be working on outreach, starting with a community meeting next Thursday night at Sunrise Elementary School.
So you've got concerned neighbors about traffic, safety, speeding, dangerous drivers, reckless drivers, what
running
have you.
Red lights, it's a big thing. We all see it.
And Target Zero is this group like the Committee to End Homelessness. They want to make sure that there are zero traffic fatalities. Admirable goal, but probably government is not going to be able to deliver on that. But Target Zero, according to that Como story, wants to do outreach. How pathetic is that when state officials will go full measure like having sanctuary status or banning plastic grocery bags or banning plastic straws, but then they only want to do outreach when it comes to a dangerous driving situation or dangerous intersections? You know, another component of this problem with the dangerous driving along this area of Petrovitsky is that it's just outside the Renton city limits. So that means the jurisdiction falls to the King County Sheriff's Department. And we know the Sheriff's Department is already short on deputies because of Executive Dow Constantine's fecklessness. But if more deputies were available to patrol, I'm telling you, that would be one of the quickest ways to get drivers to slow down. Because if there's a police presence there, that's what changes behavior. Every time you come around a bend or you get a police cruiser up ahead, what does everybody do? Everybody taps the brakes. Everybody slows down when they see the police cruiser. But this idea that Target Zero is hearing from all these neighbors and complaining about this, we're going to do outreach.
And you said they get a grant, X amount of dollars, restricted. You can't use it for structures, right, or safety barriers.
It
or
just
lighting.
Shows you that, yes, when the political policy is to ban plastic grocery bags, they can do it at the snap of a finger. But when they need to make roads safer, well, we're going to start with outreach. Why didn't they start with outreach on the plastic grocery bags? Why don't they do that with the plastic straws? They could say, hey, you know what? Just don't use the straws. Bring your own bags to the grocery store. They could have done that then, but they chose not to. That's what bothers me so greatly about what's going on based on these neighbors' concerns out there in the Renton Fairwood area. Okay. Lars Larson is coming up next here on the Commute with Carlson. Just in for John today. John will be back tomorrow, but Lars and I will be talking about this Court of Appeals hearing today on the Trump deportation flights. This is the big appeal that the Trump administration wants to win.
See, I mean, that's why he's always here on time.
So, Lars, good morning.
I wish I had that kind of music selection. How are you, folks?
I am fine. Big oral arguments today for the Trump administration. This is the appeal on judge banning Donald Trump's deportation flights on illegal aliens and or international gang members.
I don't see how Trump loses this, because the Constitution gives control of this to the president. The statutes give control of immigration exclusively to the federal government. And inside the federal government, Congress can write the laws, but the president is charged with enforcing them faithfully. And that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
So how do they beat him?
And, you know, kind of looking in the crystal ball here, just for the sake of argument, that if the Court of Appeals, this is a three judge panel today, the D.C. Appellate Court, if they rule in Trump's favor and basically go against the original judge's ruling, Judge James Boasberg, who ruled against Trump, this is ultimately setting up a trip to the Supreme Court anyway, because illegal immigration activists, they aren't going to stop if they lose this appeal today. They're going to want to try and have another shot at this as well.
And interesting, too, that some of the people getting booted, like some of the students, not just the TDA members who are involved in overt violent crime, but I've been looking back, and there's a very good piece that was written over the weekend about all the Supreme Court cases that have said that illegal aliens or any kind of alien, foreign national in America does not have the same constitutional rights that you and I enjoy.
Okay.
And which is an important point.
Yeah. And then I'm seeing one other item related to the Tren de Aragua angle on this. And this is Fox News reporter who posted on Friday. The acting ICE director, Todd Lyons, on Friday announced 68 arrests of Tren de Aragua gang members over the prior 2 days, and that 394 Tren de Aragua members have been...
As Philip J. gets in ready to set up the 7 o'clock hour, Mark Christopher and Philip J. in for John Carlson. 1 hour from now, Phil and everybody, Talk Radio 570 KVI, and your chance to win over $2,000, $2,025 here in what we're doing in ushering in Trump's golden age of America. You also get a chance to win a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card. All you're going to do is text a word that Philip J. is going to give you just right after headlines at 8 o'clock. The phone number you'll text is 206-421-5757. Just the word is all we need for a chance to enter. It's a simple contest, Phil. We do it 3 other times today. A different word, we can actually do all 4 for a better chance to win.
Yeah, total 4 chances to enter to win today. So you listen, you know, 4 different hours on KVI this morning at 8:04, then again at 1 o'clock, at 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and 4 o'clock with the Ari Hoffman Show this afternoon. You listen all 4 times, you'll have 4 different keywords you can text us. That'll give you 4 chances total today to enter to win. Increase your chances of winning that $2,025 and the Daniel's Broiler gift card. Fantastic food there at Daniel's Broiler. A great time to be had by all at Daniel's Broiler. We're in for Carlson this morning. Coming up at 8:35, this is the other big ticket item we've got for you this morning. On Friday, a King County judge ruled that I-Initiative 2066, which was passed by the voters last November on natural gas access in homes, businesses, and new construction, is unconstitutional, violates the single subject rule, amongst the other things that the judge said. At 8:35 this morning, as we sit in for John Carlson, we will interview one of the sponsors of Initiative 2066, State Representative and State Republican Party Chair Jim Walsh, for his perspective on this. This is going to get appealed. I don't know where that puts success in upholding the will of the voters or not. That is the real dicey question right now, but that's why we want to have State Rep Jim Walsh. He's the chair of the State Republican Party on at 8:35 to see what he has to say, what he thinks is a possibility after this initial ruling by a King County Superior Court judge last Friday. That was the news that broke Friday afternoon after John Carlson's show was off the air Friday morning. Well, right now, we want to examine what's going on with the transportation system around the state of Washington, deteriorating roads, transit ridership, all in the backdrop of increased state spending on this. From the Washington Policy Center, we've got the director of the Coles Center for Transportation Policy. Joining us from the Washington Policy Center is Charles Prestrud, who helped put together this kind of an annual report card. Charles, good morning. Thanks for jumping on with us this morning on KVI to talk about what you found.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
So, big ticket items here, the state transportation system. We're talking about roads, ferries, bridges, and then mass transit is a part of this as well. What sticks out to you most? I know one of the things that you've got in here is about public transit ridership is down, but you've also got concerns about deteriorating road conditions. Which one of those two do you think is most significant right now for the state of Washington?
Well, for most taxpayers and travelers in the state of Washington, the condition of the state highway system is probably the bigger concern, mm-hmm. because that accounts for almost all the freight traffic in the state, as well as most of the vehicular traffic, people commuting and so on. Transit only accounts for about 5% or less of all trips that people take in the state, and of course, none of the freight delivery. And the reason the condition of the state highways is a concern is that about a year ago, the Secretary of Transportation for the state of Washington, Roger Millar, told the state legislature that his agency was facing $1 billion per year shortfall in funding, and that's how much they needed to bring the state highway system up to what they call a state of good repair. So it has been underfunded by so much for so long that now it's starting to fall apart.
So now you say $1 billion a year to kind of bring it up to reasonable standards or fair standards. Is this a function of the state just doesn't have that $1 billion or that $1 billion a year is probably being spent on something else?
It's a combination of the two.
Oh, okay.
For easily the last 10 years, the legislature has underfunded highway preservation and maintenance. At the same time, the big new highway projects they're working on, completing I-405, the 167 and 509 gateway projects down in South King County and Pierce County are just two, and then there's the 520 completion hooking up to I-5 in Seattle. Those projects have gone far over budget, so that was an additional problem for the budget writers.
So all three of those projects were over budget?
I believe so.
Or at least...
And at the same time, the state legislature has been very generous about using transportation funds for all kinds of things that don't fix the highways.
Okay.
Increased transit subsidies, a lot of bike pedestrian projects.
Those get expensive.
Yeah.
For what they deliver, anyway.
Yeah. So, and some of them may be good things, but when there isn't enough money to go around, it seems silly to spend it on kind of peripheral programs when you're not even fixing the potholes and the broken expansion joints.
Not taking care of the basics. Yeah, I had to make a couple of runs out to Snoqualmie Pass last week. So one of the times I went skiing, and I kind of noticed as I go out I-90 Issaquah Front Street area, you've kind of got to play slalom out there on the roadways, unless you want to drive right through some pretty sizable potholes. And so I'm guessing that a lot of other drivers out there probably have to get this memory bank issue going with their brains of, oh gosh, I'm coming up on that section where there's broken pavement, potholes, exposed rebar, and things like that. And, you know, you have to take evasive actions and start basically driving over the bumps there, the reflectors on the striped part of the lane.
Well, I was going to say, too, Charles, great to have you here. It's Mark along with Phil here helping out with the Carlson commute. And you bring up the fact that our roads are damaged. A lot of us think of the ghost lanes, like on Southbound 5 there, let's say south of Tacoma, where a certain glare of sunshine, you can't even see the lines to figure out what lane you're going to be in. And then coming north in that area, we get that hop. if you're in a certain, like a big Dodge truck like me with the wheelbase, my truck starts hopping along and I'm like, what's causing all this? And I guess one question, Charles, sharing with you, and you're saying, boy, these roads aren't getting repaired. We're not, you know, taking care of them. What causes the damage to most of our roads in the first place? Is it the freight trucks? Are they perhaps overweight?
Well, there may be trucks that are overweight and they have to pay an extra fee. But it is true that trucks are responsible for much more damage than regular automobiles because they're obviously much heavier and their tires are inflated at a much higher pressure. In addition, we have a problem in Washington State, and that is studded tires, which really deteriorate roadway surfaces very quickly. They are really tough on both cement and asphalt. So, yeah, it's a serious problem.
Talking to Charles Prestrud, he's the Transportation Policy Director at the Washington Policy Center. And last week, the Washington Policy Center unveiled kind of the annual report card for Washington's transportation future. And ferries, this has been such an ongoing problem during Governor Jay Inslee's tenure. And now Governor Ferguson has announced that he'll do some changes that kind of go in the opposite direction of what Inslee was trying to do. What's the status with the state ferries right now? I mean, I know the report says total annual service hours for the state ferries declined from 2012 over to the year 2023, about a 17% cut in total service hours. How would you assess the state ferry situation right now?
Almost all of that decrease in service hours was during the COVID pandemic because they didn't have enough crew because they forced them out of their jobs if they wouldn't get vaccinated. And they barely had enough staff to crew all the boats even before that. The vaccine mandate resulted in 132 ferry system employees leaving the service. And then the other problem that the ferry system has had that they've known about for a long time is that they don't have enough spare boats, and their fleet is very old. They've got a lot of ferries that are 40, even 50, one that's even 60 years old, more than 60 years old. And they break down more often. They cost more to maintain. And when you have unplanned maintenance, then it means there may not be a spare boat that you can plug into the schedule. So as a result of those things, from when the pandemic began to now, the ferry system has not been able to provide all the service that they used to. Now, the good news is that the ferry system has worked real hard to hire additional crew. And so this summer, they're going to have almost a full schedule. But they're counting on no more unplanned breakdowns.
Yeah, right. Cross your fingers on that one, right?
Yeah. And they still have a problem that they don't have a contract yet for new ferries. They've been working on it for 6 years.
Does this relate to the either electric ferries or the hybrid electric ferries?
Yeah, this is the hybrid electric
ferries. Ironed all that out yet?
And Governor Inslee, back in 2018, directed the ferry system to transition to a zero-emissions fleet, which we now know is much more difficult and expensive than they thought. And the result is still no new boats, and the earliest that they'll get any new ones is probably late 2028. So they're going to have to keep some of the old creaky boats running a few years longer until the new boats start to arrive. We should see the bids on the new hybrid electric boats in early April.
Oh, okay.
And it'll be very interesting to see what those bids look like and whether there's sticker shock in the legislature.
Yeah. And the positive, Charles, because I'm a ferry commuter too here, and as you address the situations here with the straight transportation, positive is I hear now they're getting close to three boats back at the triangle here, Fauntleroy, Vashon, and over at Southworth. The one I'm concerned about, because this is like 7 years ago, I thought, how cool, Karen and I, to move over to Hood Canal. I got the Bremerton boat. I'll get the room on. You get to work on time, and like you said, the pandemic hit, and that kind of messed things up. Bremerton's been a one-boat service for now almost 3 years come this summer, And I know a lot of people, and probably you can relate to this, Charles and Phil, how many people decided, well, we can work from home with the pandemic. Let's go ahead and move to the peninsula and we'll commute by ferry if we ever come to town. And again, that's been a challenge, like for me, being, you know, one that has to be here at the crack of dawn or whatever. But the hope and the fingers crossed, like you were saying, you know, we'll see what the proposals are coming up here very soon for new boats and maybe get some built and get this thing back to the trademark number one ferry system in the country like it was for all these years of growing up here.
I mean, the Bremerton run has been a particular sore point for the mayor of Bremerton and the Chamber of Commerce over there because they weren't happy with the service even before the pandemic hit. And as you point out, now it's been down to just one boat, I think, for the last 4 years. And so if you miss that ferry, or maybe it's full and you can't get on, it's 2.5 hours before the next ferry sailing.
Yeah, it was 14 sailings daily back and forth. Now it's down to 7. Even working weekends here, if I can't grab the one boat at 12:20, then it's not till 2:50 departing Seattle in the afternoon. So I got to rely on Bainbridge and then drive about 22 extra miles. So it's been an adjustment, but we're all in hope that it will get better.
Yeah, and it is a high priority for the ferry system, and I know they're working on it, but let's hope they can make that work this summer.
So where is all the transportation money going in this state? You said roads are underfunded. We're hearing about the ferry system, that we know about all those problems. Is the money just going to bike lanes? Is it going to mass transit? Where does the majority of transportation money get spent now in the state of Washington?
Well, it's a complicated question because there's more than one pot of money.
Mm-hmm.
There's a state transportation budget, which is about $6.5 or $7 billion. And then there's 30 transit agencies in the state, and their total revenue is about $5.5 billion. And then you've got cities and counties that collect their own taxes, mostly property tax. But some other sources, too. And then there's federal funding that comes into the state that gets spread around. Over time, the total amount that is spent on transportation in Washington State has grown substantially. But a lot of that increase has gone into public transportation. They went from a little over $2 billion a year to...
Yeah. Mass transit, basically?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They went from total revenues of a little over $2 billion a year to over $5 billion a year. But at the same time, ridership was decreasing. So we've had a real hard time translating the additional revenues into better transportation system performance. And some of that is due to the very high cost of things like the Sound Transit Light Rail program and the new highway expansion projects that the state's working on.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of those here a few minutes ago. Talking to the Transportation Policy Director at the Washington Policy Center, Charles Prestrud. So just talking about the light rail or mass transit ridership has been down. Is any of that expected to change with the return to office work orders by Amazon or other companies that have occurred in the last few weeks or month?
That's a good question, and there's been a lot of speculation about that. When the pandemic hit, the transit agencies were pretty confident that, you know, as soon as the pandemic was behind us, things would return to normal. They had some plans for service improvements, but that was 4 years ago. And for most transit agencies in the state, ridership is still down, anywhere from 10 or 15% to more than 25% in some cases. And what that is telling us is that there has been a long-term shift in travel behavior. There are many more people who now work from home. There are also more people who shop from home, and they take in entertainment from home in the form of streaming video and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer realistic to expect that things are going to go back to the way they were in 2019. Transit is going to be in a much more competitive market going forward. And I think that when autonomous vehicles become available, and they already are testing them in San Francisco and Phoenix and some other places, it's going to put further pressure on the transit agencies. It's going to segment the market so that people who are in a hurry and have a little more money to spend are going to go with the robo-taxi because it's a lot more convenient and private and probably safe.
Direct, yeah.
And this is going to make it even harder for the transit agencies because they won't have a captive market anymore.
Yeah, that will be a prediction that could have significant impact on the billions and billions of dollars that have now been invested in Western Washington in light rail. Charles Prestrud from the Washington Policy Center. He's a transportation policy director there. Thank you for sharing what you found in this annual report on the transportation system in Washington. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
All right. There's Charles, and WashingtonPolicy.org is the website for the Washington Policy Center. You can find the report there and read more about some of the specifics they've come up with. In for John Carlson this morning. John's just taken today off on a Monday. He'll be back tomorrow, Tuesday, and here the rest of the week leading up to his retirement, his final shows in early April. I'm Phil Vandervoort, his producer, along with the radio legend Mark Christopher. We'll get into the social media sweep. Come major story that developed Friday after John Carlson's show was off the air was a court ruling in King County, a King County Superior Court judge striking down Initiative 2066. This was the voter-approved initiative back in November, allowing for natural gas choice. And one of those sponsors of Initiative 2066 was Brian Haywood from Let's Go Washington. Let's Go Washington was the group that spearheaded the initiative drive. And Brian Haywood posted about the ruling last Friday, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Haywood posted, "The people speak by initiative, statewide initiative. The legislature spits on the people and in the dead of night cynically guts parents' rights." And he posted this on Friday. "Friday, a cynical Jay Inslee appointee judge with Jay Inslee in attendance during the verdict delivery overturned Initiative 2066. The Democrats in power in this state, Haywood writes, are not even trying to hide their contempt for the voter. We must fight or leave. For now, I am choosing to stay and fight. The Building Industry Association of Washington," this is the building industry construction trade group, "will fight all the way to the Supreme Court for Initiative 2066, which was intended to stop Governor Inslee's ban on natural gas in new construction and extending natural gas, I think, in other already existing construction." And so Brian Haywood writes, "What will you do? How will you fight?" And at 8:35 this morning, I'm going to talk to one of the other people that was instrumental in getting Initiative 2066 to the ballot and through the initiative process with all the signatures. That would be the other sponsor of Initiative 2066, State Rep Jim Walsh, who's also the state Republican Party chair. So as we sit in for John Carlson this morning, please, please be sure to be here at 8:35 this morning so you can hear what Jim Walsh has to say about what happens next and what was going on with this King County Superior Court judge's ruling. We've had no shortage of Tesla takedown stories, continuing coverage in the news on Tesla takedowns. Last week, John Carlson was telling you a story about a driver who passed a Tesla on a double yellow line on a curve in the road in Linwood, slammed on the brakes, forcing the Tesla driver to stop. And then that driver jumped out, walked back to the Tesla driver and yelled at the Tesla driver, telling them to sell their Tesla, that they were driving a Nazi car. Jonathan Cho on social media, he's always got a camera rolling somewhere. Jonathan Cho has obtained video that he has now posted on social media. Says, exclusive, police are looking for an unhinged woman in Issaquah after she was caught on camera keying a Tesla Model Y. It's almost a similar scenario. It's a parking lot. And the video shows sentry mode on the back of a Tesla. So the rear view camera on a Tesla backing out. And the white Toyota 4Runner stops to kind of prevent that Tesla from pulling forward. And the female driver of the 4Runner, the Toyota 4Runner, steps out, walks up to the door of the person in the Tesla Model Y. And Jonathan Cho writes, this incident happened in the Issaquah Commons Shopping Center, 755 Northwest Gilman Boulevard. The Tesla driver was backing out of the parking lot with her kid in the back seat. That's when she made eye contact with the woman who kind of attempted to block in the car, who allegedly flipped her off for no reason. The woman then marched out of the car, yelled a few words, and scratched up the driver's side door with the key of her vehicle. And again, the suspect vehicle is a white Toyota 4Runner, but there is a bike rack on the back of the 4Runner, which obscures the license plate on the 4Runner, based on the cameras on the Tesla that were recording the other vehicle. So Cho writes, unfortunately, the bike rack blocked the Washington license plate, but the vehicle involved is a white 2018 Toyota 4Runner SUV. And Cho writes, let's make this woman that confronted the Tesla driver famous. And he has captured some shots of her face, and Cho has posted those on his social media feed on X. You can see it all at Cho Show, C-H-O-E for Cho, Jonathan Cho's last name, S-H-O-W, at Cho Show if you want to see that.
Getting to a point, you just keep the Tesla in the garage, don't want to go anywhere. If you have a Tesla and haven't had an encounter, I'm just curious, yeah. Phil, if we've got stories among
give
our listeners here. You don't have to give your name if you have fear neighbor's going to hear you. 206-421-5757.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, Monday morning. If you want to share the story, because it's just like, you know, you buy a car, but how did you know that, you know, 2-3 years go by and all of a sudden this whole thing would be a controversy of, you know, what's going on in our nation's capital, and it wasn't your fault. You were just thinking, well, I think I want to try one. I'll get some money and see what happens with a Tesla. But
so that whole question ties into something I want to get to next. Did Jerry Seinfeld predict Democrats and their problems in 2025? Did he predict all this back in 1990 with some of his stand-up? A lot of it revolves around this Tesla takedown stuff, but there's some other examples.
Sarcasm and a full helping of fun. Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins. Weekdays 9 to noon. KVI.
Quite a blitz going on with the scam, Phil, about the good-to-go scam on cell phones.
Yeah, I've received that on my phone.
Everybody's getting it. Just don't answer, don't reply. It'll say you have a balance unpaid, criminal activity, we're coming after you, and it just gets better and better. Check with the older folks in the family as well, and just delete if you want. FBI is investigating around the state of Washington. If you want to make note, if you get a phone number or any kind of an address, write it down, and you can share it with them here. But it's almost like I have a good to go, and because I do group text to my family, I'm like the youngest of 7 kids. Now everybody's getting it in my family, and are like, I don't have a good to go. Who started it? So maybe there's a way it just attaches to a group text. Keep that in mind.
Well, I'm going to tell you this, everybody: the road to hell is paved with scammers. All those scammers, that's the highway they're on to right there if they're worried about those toll lanes. Hey, coming up in less than 30 minutes, we've got the first keyword this morning for giving you a chance to enter to win $2,025. You can't really win money much easier than the way we're trying to set it up for you here with our KVI Golden Age giveaway. You know, the gold, Trump says the Golden Age of America is coming back. So we've got the $2,025 Golden Age giveaway at 8:04. I will give you a keyword. You will have until 9 o'clock to text it. So it's not a first person to text it wins. You'll have plenty of time to text it. But we're going to give you 4 different chances to hear a keyword today. And there'll be different keywords at the 4 different times. The first one I'll give you is at 8:04. And then coming up at 11 o'clock on the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show, there in the beginning of the 11 o'clock hour, listen for the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins keyword that they're going to give you. And at 1 o'clock, in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll give you another one right before we start that hour, the Lars Larson Show. And then Ari Hoffman will give you a 4th keyword at 4 o'clock, just after 4 o'clock when he starts his show, starts his hour of the show just after 4 o'clock. So each of those hours, 8:04, 11:04, 1:04 with Lars Larson, and then at 4:04, maybe even a little bit earlier than that for Ari, because he jumps in right after the news update at 2 after the hour. But you listen at those times, you get the new keyword that we give you. That'll give you another chance to enter to win this $2,025 plus a Daniel's Broiler gift card. But that's just our little way of sharing the wealth with you here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. John Carlson's out this morning. John will be back tomorrow. He's just taking a day off, making it a 3-day weekend. And I want to tell you something that I've discovered. I think Jerry Seinfeld, TV show, sitcom host, long time stand-up comic, I think Jerry Seinfeld was predicting back in 1990 that he knew what was going to happen politically 35 years later as we hit the year 2025. So I really think Jerry Seinfeld inadvertently predicted the current state of the Democratic Party back in 1990. And a lot of this revolves around the Tesla takedown stuff. It also revolves around what we saw with Trump's joint address to Congress here a couple weeks ago, where the House Democrats held up their little paddle signs with their snarky words and their little political sloganeering. And I'll play the stand-up clip that Seinfeld did, these 35 years ago, that points out how the Democrats have run out of ideas.
Women know what men want. Men know what men want. What do we want? We want women. That's it. It's the only thing we know for sure. It really is. We want women. How do we get them? Oh, we don't know about that. We don't know. The next step after that, we have no idea. This is why you see men honking car horns, yelling from construction sites. These are the best ideas we've had so far. The car horn honk. Is that the beauty? Have you seen men doing this? What is this? The man is in the car. The woman walks by the front of the car. He honks the... Eh, 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 eh. This man is out of ideas. How does this... I don't think she likes me.
And that, I think, perfectly sums up where the Democrats are right now in 2025. They have run out of ideas. Their best ideas are burning Teslas, confronting Tesla drivers, protesting at Tesla shops and showrooms. These are the best ideas they've got. They are holding up these ping pong paddle signs at Trump speeches in Congress. These are the best ideas they have come up with. And they're not very good. That shows you how desperate they are. This, as Seinfeld says, is the last brain cell of an idea that they've had.
This has got to be just the last living brain cell in this guy's skull that comes up with this idea.
I'm going to overtake you in traffic. I'm going to stop my car in front of yours, and I'm going to jump out, and I'm going to trot back to your window and bully you and chastise you for buying and driving a Tesla. They're out of ideas. That is exactly what Jerry Seinfeld was talking about with his bit about men trying to pick up on women by honking their car horn at women. Democrats are in that car and they're, hey, can I get your attention over here? And that's exactly what the Democrats are doing in 2025, trying to get the attention of voters. They're honking at them as the rest of us are going about our lives. And in the meantime, they're flipping off Elon Musk pictures and flipping off Tesla drivers. This is clearly the evidence that you are simply out of ideas. You have no solutions or thoughts. So what do? You devolve to violence, vandalism, destruction. And that is exactly what the Democrats are up to. And it fits perfectly into what Seinfeld was talking about.
Are you running out of conversations among family, you and your wife, when you're around friends and everybody maybe on different sides where everybody's just a little nervous to bring up any kind of a topic or if something brings
up a
Tesla?
Yeah. My wife and I don't agree on much of anything politically.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's like, I just wonder if it's different, like in the workplace for a lot of people now and maybe, you know, people you talk to, maybe if you take trans or if you're sitting on a ferry like me, mm-hmm. you notice the conversations are a little different and we're just a little restricted on all that's going on in the world here as we hear of the Tesla so-called attacks and protests, or we hear about what's going on with, you know, all the cutbacks. And it's just a different time in life. And a lot of us, I hear, even my wife Karen says, gosh, if mom and dad were still here, how would they deal with this? And I'm thinking of my dad, World War II vet, shot down the North Pacific, miracles as he was rescued. He's the only reason I'm here today, but he just wanted a big family, a living life, and he did. And he said, Mark, just get out there and do what you want to do and just make it a good world for everybody. And we all try to do that. But there's just all these challenges filling the news and everything we hear every day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hopefully we can get a little bit more forward progress in the state of Washington specifically as it relates to this, because I know we've been knocking our heads against the wall trying to point out all the failures and the Democratic Party policies, the majority Democratic Party in the state legislature that keep offering up these policies that simply do not deliver what is promised. And that's why I think Jay Inslee is a charlatan. And we'll get into a little bit more of the Jay Inslee situation and the Climate Commitment Act and his ban on natural gas, which voters reversed. But then last Friday, a King County judge reversed what the voters reversed and essentially invalidated Initiative 2066 that passed last November. This is the ban on natural gas. We'll get into that at 8:35 this morning in just about 50 minutes here on The Commute with Carlson. As I sit in for John Carlson with Mark Christopher, at 8:35, I'll be interviewing State Rep Jim Walsh. He's the State Republican Party Chair, sponsor of Initiative 2066. He has some things to say about this that you're going to want to hear. So that's something that we'll get into coming up at 8:35 this morning. And then, of course, we got our Golden Age giveaway coming up after the top of the hour. We'll give you the first keyword of the day for your chance to win $2,025. Now, late last week, there was a walkout of Attorney General's office employees in Seattle, Tacoma, and Olympia. I think there may have been some employees that walked out in Everett, too. So the Attorney General's office for the state of Washington has offices in Olympia, Tacoma, Seattle, and Everett. And Fox 13, they ended up catching up to some of these Attorney General's office employees that walked out because they're in protest that Governor Bob Ferguson wants to furlough some state workers in order to save money on this $10, $12, $14 billion in overspending that the Democrats in Olympia and the legislature have been pursuing. So you got to listen to this union spokesperson, I guess, is who this is. This woman that works in the state attorney general's office, she's a spokesperson for the union. She's speaking on behalf of the union, or that her affiliation with the union, about opposing these furloughs that Governor Bob Ferguson is considering. And the furlough is basically you would not get paid for one day of work a month. So you would have one furlough day a month. So it would be an unpaid vacation day. That's what the furlough amounts to by Bob Ferguson. But listen to this comment from the union worker at the Attorney General's office.
So we're hoping that every legislator understands that the work of the Attorney General's office, which a lot of people, I understand, don't know, so we need to advocate for ourselves. But the work that we do is to keep criminals behind bars or put them there, and also the civil rights and everything that's coming from the other Washington that right now we're having to defend for our Washingtonian safety and security.
So the Attorney General employee union spokesperson is reminding everybody that, hey, at the Attorney General's office, we employees, the rank and file, we're responsible for making criminals get put in jail, and we make sure criminals are kept in jail. Where was this concern about criminals getting out of jail when Governor Inslee and the legislative Democrats were rolling back crime laws and rolling back police chase protocols? I don't remember the office staff at Bob Ferguson's Attorney General's office, those employees that are represented by a union, I don't remember them raising a ruckus about their work, that it was so intrinsic to keep criminals locked up during all those political decisions. But now that there's a once a month furlough on the horizon, now all of a sudden we need the union employees at the Attorney General's office to make sure that criminals aren't getting out of jail. Wow. Why wasn't this a big issue when Inslee and the legislative Democrats were rolling back all these soft-on-crime laws? Wow. But, of course, now that they might not be getting paid for one day of work a month as the state overspends too much money, now it's a crisis. Now it's a problem. Wow. So I wanted to play that clip for you and use that to illustrate the insipid politics that we have here in the state of Washington. All right. Did you realize who was at the Gonzaga men's basketball NCAA tournament game?
Didn't get a chance
over the weekend
watch.
In Wichita?
No.
Yeah, I noticed this on the actual game feed because I watched the Gonzaga game versus Houston. I'll tell you what notable Washington politician was in the audience. And it turns out that a Spokane TV station, because of course that's where Gonzaga is from.
Sure.
TV station in Spokane talked to this notable Washington politician attending the ball game.
In Wichita. Busy time in Seattle it was too, Phil.
I didn't even bother trying to fill out a bracket. There was some madness in March over the weekend. The Gonzaga Bulldogs, Spokane, and I don't know what happened with Oregon last night. Oregon would be the other Northwest team that was Still in it as
playing Arizona last night.
7:30 or 8:30 when I went to bed last night. I did not stay up for the end of the Oregon game, but Gonzaga and Houston played each other on Saturday, and it was a barn burner for a little bit at the end, but Houston was in control most of the way. Houston ended up beating Gonzaga. And lo and behold, I'm watching the game, and they kind of do the obligatory pan of the crowd or one of the crowd shots, and I'm looking at this person on the screen going, I'll be dang, but I'm pretty sure that's U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell standing there.
Mm.
And then I ended up coming across a KXLY news clip where KXLY had a reporter that was in Wichita for this NCAA basketball game, and they ended up catching up to Senator Maria Cantwell after the game.
Well, we're really proud of the Gonzaga Bulldogs to pull within a few points of a number one seed. And they almost pulled it off, but we're very proud of them and you know, fought very hard against a team that might go all the way. So, you know, we very, very appreciative of Mark Few and the Gonzaga Bulldogs.
Whew. Okay. Can you feel the Spokane energy in Senator Cantwell? Wow. And then the KXLY reporter kind of asked about, so what was the fan energy like there in the Gonzaga section in the crowd during the game?
How would you describe the feeling throughout the game? How are you feeling?
Well, we were, you know, Wichita is not everybody's destination, so there weren't as big a Zag crowd that we've probably seen at other playoff games. But
it was loud.
But everybody was on their feet yelling and cheering, both for defense and for offense. And clearly the Zags, you know, were a great senior team of people that probably, you know, were giving everything for this effort.
Whoa, can we get the senator a teleprompter or something like that? Man, oh, man, trying to speak off script is not her strength. Is she going to the Joe Biden School of Public Speaking? What's going on here? I think now you kind of get an idea of why she so rarely does any interviews, and she certainly never does any challenging interviews.
And KXLY TV out of Spokane. I mean, that covers a lot of Eastern Washington. So
it's a pretty
a lot of people
simple
just
question.
Hanging, I mean, on to every word of, let's see what she has to say about our Bulldogs.
Right.
Yeah. And we're in Wichita, and we're trying to go to the Sweet 16.
She's really into basketball, huh? Okay.
Final, Arizona beat Oregon last
no
night.
No kidding.
Climate pledge, 87-83. So they're moving on here.
That game was right across the street from where we are on at the KVI studios already.
Been 10 years since we've had it, and Seattle did a great job. A lot of people here, especially that nice weather on Saturday when they all got to get out and play and explore the city. Yeah. But a good job, Seattle. To get busy Saturday, real quick, we got the home opener with Seattle Mariners to kick off a new season.
Oh, this coming weekend?
It's Thursday.
Okay, all right.
Thursday night, and events all day at T-Mobile Park. So take a breath here. It's going to be busy again with sports fanatics of all sorts.
Yeah, we want you to stick around for the next segment. Coming up after the top of the hour news and traffic, I will give you today's first keyword in the Golden Age giveaway, the KVI Golden Age giveaway. It's your first of four chances today to enter to win and win $2,025. Possibly we have a little bit more important stuff still to get to in the final hour, including at 8:35, we're going to talk to the sponsor of Initiative 2066, State Rep Jim Walsh. State Rep Walsh sponsored I-2066, which was approved by voters back in November. It was to reverse Governor Inslee's ban on natural gas and having access to natural gas in construction of a home or business. But a King County judge invalidated the statewide public vote that passed Initiative 2066, saying it's unconstitutional, violates the single subject rule that we've come to find out about with some previous statewide initiatives. So Jim Walsh will join me as I sit in for John Carlson here coming up at 8:35 this morning. Please, please be here for that.
Everybody worried about that because we were like, okay, I can hang on to my gas selection.
What does this mean?
Don't want to do electric. It's just a favorite here. But
all this double talk about natural gas is polluting and it's super clean. It's reliable, unlike electricity, which goes out in a power outage and takes days to restore. Ask the people out past Issaquah in Hobart. That had that after the bomb cyclone windstorm back in November.
Yeah.
That they were out of power for 5, 6, sometimes 7 days. But if they had natural gas, they would have a way to keep warm. So like I said, 8:35, we'll get into that story because that was a big story that broke on Friday with this King County Superior Court judge's ruling. But right now, thank you to everybody who's been playing our KVI Golden Age giveaway. It's about time to give you a keyword. The key word, and this, again, to make sure that your entry is accepted correctly, all we need is the single word. We don't need your name. We don't need your city. We don't need cool. We don't need hi. We don't need thank you. We don't need I hope I win. We just need this keyword, gold, G-O-L-D. If you want to enter for a chance to win our drawing today, text gold, G-O-L-D, to our text line number 206-421-5757. And this is your first of four chances today to win $2,025 and a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card. So you send G-O-L-D, like a gold medal. G-O-L-D. Four letters only. G-O-L-D.
And I'm texting to what number again? A little slower.
Text gold to 206-421-5757. Like I said, you don't have to add your name or anything else. Simply text that keyword gold. And if you're an iPhone user, you don't need to do any emphasis or anything like that.
I got time. I don't have to rush right now to do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. You have until 9 a.m. to get that keyword in. Don't text and drive. But once you text it, you're entered to win today's drawing. Now, you can also enter again just after 11 o'clock, just after 1 o'clock, just after 4 o'clock with our other KVI shows. So another keyword comes your way just after 11 o'clock, right before the start of the Markley Van Camp and Robbins show. And then again, just after 1 o'clock, right before the start of the Lars Larson show. And then during Ari Hoffman's show this afternoon, just around 4:02, 4:03, Ari Hoffman will give you a fourth keyword that'll give you a fourth chance to enter to win today. You get four chances to enter to win today. That'll increase your chance of being the one we pick for the $2,025. And we're doing this in conjunction with our other Lotus sister stations. So, you know, there's some other competition out there, but if you're a dedicated listener, you listen at 11 o'clock, just after 1 o'clock, and at 4 o'clock with Ari Hoffman, that'll boost your chances to win the KVI Golden Age giveaway. And we're doing this up through the middle
several
to
weeks.
The end of April. So you're going to have chances to win every weekday.
Monday through Friday.
Keep a listening. Keep a listening. Like I said, the big story from Friday's news is that the King County Superior Court judge has overturned a vote of the people of the state of Washington, the Washington natural gas measure that was approved by voters back in November. It's Initiative 2066. The opponents, basically the city of Seattle, King County, and then some activist climate agenda groups, they had argued Initiative 2066 was unconstitutional because it dealt with more than a single subject. Now, the supporters, the Building Industry Association of Washington, certainly Let's Go Washington is going to be one of these other groups that has participated in the passage of Initiative 2066. They will appeal. The Washington State Standard says that Superior Court Judge Sandra Woodland ruled I-2066 unconstitutional, runs afoul of a provision limiting citizen initiatives to no more than one subject and requiring them to contain the full text of the portion of state laws they would alter. So we're talking about technicalities here. And the Washington State Standard says in issuing the decision from the bench, Woodland said the purpose of the single subject requirement is to prevent log rolling or pushing through undesirable legislation by attaching it to desirable legislation. Boy, that sounds like what the Climate Commitment Act did. It produced undesirable legislation, an increase on the price of carbon fuel in the state, in an effort to try and create, I guess, something that the climate activist supporters would say is beneficial, which is creating a massive slush fund of taxpayer money to go to whatever source they'd prefer. I mean, if that doesn't fit into what the Climate Commitment Act has done, that is still law, by the way, I don't know what else would be. And of course, there was a statewide initiative to repeal that portion of the Climate Commitment Act, the carbon auction pricing scheme that Governor Inslee and legislative Democrats in Olympia ended up installing. But that's still law. Here's a quote from the press release from the coalition of groups that filed the lawsuit. And it's attributed to the judge, Superior Court Judge Sandra Woodland. quote, this is a difficult task in the present case because the body of the initiative is so broad and free-ranging that it makes it hard to say with any precision what the general topic is, end quote. And if that's the judge's conclusion, that sounds like a shortcut to thinking to me.
Do we know if the judge has natural gas at home?
I have no idea.
I'm just curious looking at numbers.
No idea. Now,
Hayward.
There have been all kinds of indications that this judge, Sandra Woodland, has contributed to a variety of different Democratic candidates for office. And some of them include one-time Seattle City Councilwoman. She ran for mayor, but failed in her bid for mayor, Lorena Gonzalez. This judge has passed political contributions to left-wing, you know, climate agenda-supporting politicians. And I'm going to ask one of the initiative sponsors, Jim Walsh, at 8:35, as I said, in for John Carlson this morning, I'm going to ask when a recusal might be in order based on what we're learning about some of Judge Sandra Woodland's political contributions.
That's good you said that.
For the life of me, I cannot even figure out why a judge would give a political contribution.
Yeah, Philip J., Mark Christopher here, and I'm just looking at numbers here, and I got this off of Haywire.org, Brian Haywood's website here. Yeah. If you're curious how many people this affected when, you know, it was up in the election there, the initiative back in November, 1,271,000 plus households in the state of Washington rely on natural gas, 108,368 businesses.
Yeah.
So it's not a little thing. It's a big thing. And we got a lot of natural gas available.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Domestically, it's very easy for the U.S. to produce. And in that respect, I mean, I got to see if I can find this clip. Steve Moore, who talks to John Carlson from time to time, he had this item back in November, I think, when Initiative 2066 was, you know, barely passing. It was just ahead, but it hadn't been finalized. The vote hadn't been finalized yet. And Steve Moore and John Carlson were having this conversation about natural gas.
I've said this many times on your show again, but can I tell your audience again? The reason the United States has reduced its carbon emissions by about 30 to 40% and more than virtually any other country in the world is because we've been transitioning to natural gas, not transitioning away from natural gas. It is clean burning.
But it's a fossil fuel that makes it evil. You should know that by now. that's
unbelievable.
So there's John Carlson, Steve Moore on the show, you know, back in November, early November. But the mania to stop anything that is carbon fossil fuel, it never stops in the state of Washington with the political activists and the majority Democrats in the state legislature. I don't know that I've heard Bob Ferguson chime in on this yet. So I saw a variety of different reaction to this court ruling Friday and over the weekend when I was searching around trying to find information that I could share and present with you as I sat in for John Carlson this morning. But I don't recall seeing anything from Ferguson's office or anything that would be considered, I think, profound. So that's, you know, kind of where things stand right now with Initiative 2066, but why we want to get State Rep Jim Walsh, who's the State Republican Party chair, on the show so that we can get more of his insight on what this is going to mean going forward. Let's get to some of the comments on the text line this morning. The KVI text line, 206-421-5757, 206-421-5757. Let's see. Steve writes, and I think Steve's in Shoreline. Yeah, Steve in Shoreline writes, hey, Phil, didn't the state Supreme Court and the Secretary of State approve the natural gas initiative? And what kind of authority would that give this situation? The state Supreme Court, I don't know that they had to weigh in on the initiative getting to the people, but the Secretary of State obviously has to validate all the signatures that went into it. And I think Mark and I talked about this a little bit earlier in the show. The state attorney general's office has to write the ballot title, which shows up on the November election form when the voter is asked about do they support or oppose this initiative, 2066. So the Attorney General's office does have to write something. And my recollection is that, and if it wasn't Initiative 2066, that there were disputes over some of the other ballot titles that the state attorney general's office did write, because they just, they tried to couch the information on the initiative in a way that was not clear for voters. So
we kept saying yes means less with Brian Hayward talking about the initiatives, yes, and we all stuff, even I thought when I got that ballot, I think I should vote no if I'm in favor of all this stuff going away and in favor of keeping natural gas as a selection, you know, to us individuals. But there was a lot of confusion on all the initiatives, which I told you guys when I was one of the first to get a ballot. And I said, I'm here every day, and I hear Brian Hayward. He says, yes for less. And I'm like, well, it makes it sound like you have to vote no. And a lot of people did, and then tuned into John Carlson show the next day, and were like, oh, my gosh, did I make a mistake?
Yeah. Bob in Portland texted in on the text line, one of the arguments against I-2066 was that the voters were confused and didn't know what they were voting for. Given that logic, the other initiatives that failed should be implemented because of the confusion Bob Ferguson wrote into the ballot titles. So that kind of hits on one of the items we were just saying. Murph in Gig Harbor says, hey, fill in the gang, dirty little secret in the Washington State Constitution is that the single subject rule also applies to the legislature. I would hazard to guess 50% of the laws of the legislature that they pass could probably not stand the single subject test. And I'll have to double check that what he's saying, that that applies to the Washington State Constitution as well. I've never, ever heard that reference before. And we've had this come up before.
That'd be a good find if it
initiative,
was.
Where initiative is ruled by a judge to violate the single subject rule.
Our listeners are so smart at KVI.
Yeah. So, and there's at least one other one I wanted to find in here, and I'm just skimming through it here. Guy is texting in. He writes, this judge in Seattle on the National Gas Initiative makes me not want to vote anymore. Voting anymore in this state is a joke. You look forward to maybe things will change a little bit. Out of control judges, uninformed voters, and just stupid people. Guy writes, just makes me not want to vote anymore. I've lived here all my life.
He's not alone. Look how many people voted for the first time in a long time because they wanted to be a part of all this. And here you go. You're scaring people away again.
Yeah. We were talking about some of the, this was the Fairwood neighborhood in Renton that has the fatal car accident a year ago, and neighbors there are still nervous, still worried, and asking for help and trying to slow down drivers and things like that. We were talking about for the King County Sheriff's Department, which has to patrol this area of unincorporated Renton, that if the King County Sheriff's Department wasn't already short on staffing deputies, you might be able to have officers in patrol vehicles out there along this stretch of Petrovitsky Road that's had dangerous driving conditions or near misses and in some cases fatal crashes. And we were talking about, hey, you know, just the mere police presence can get people to slow down. And Dwight in Mount Vernon wrote in, years ago in Port Townsend, they positioned an older police cruiser at a key location with a uniformed mannequin holding a hairdryer, and that prompted a lot of people to slow down and hit the brakes. So just that simple idea. In the 735 segment, we were talking about the Tesla takedown nonsense. Travis in Kent posted, he sent us on a text message. Hey, if you want to send a message that you won't live in fear for all these Tesla takedown people and these bullies that are now keying cars and damaging cars and cutting off drivers like the case in Linwood last week and then yelling at the drivers, if you want to send a message that you won't live in fear and that you support Elon Musk, just buy shares of Tesla. And I've heard of other people in the political talk world that are suggesting that as well. The price is dropping right now amid some of this uncertainty, but you'd be buying at a discounted price, that's for sure. And after it's dropped, you know, the likelihood is that would continue to rise a little bit. So that's always reasonable advice. And then text from, let's see, I don't think there's a first
name. I love how listeners can text their comments. Way to go, everybody, for doing this.
No first name or hometown given on this one. And it says, God bless any EV owner listening to KVI, but I doubt they exist. conservatives have no business with EVs. They are impractical in every way. I'd have to disagree with that. I think EVs are a niche car. For certain people, mm-hmm. they're going to fit the bill. For some people, if you have to do a ton of driving,
sure.
If you need that extra range for the driving requirements that you have, you're absolutely right. An EV is not going to fit. You know, a hybrid will do the job, but certainly there are applications where if you're driving around town, having an EV is an easy way to go. Now,
in the big city, it makes sense.
One of the other aspects of that is
local driving.
After all the pro-climate Democrats told us to stop driving combustion engine vehicles and start driving electric vehicles, now they're coming for the electric vehicles and jacking up the price to own and operate an electric vehicle. So, you know, for everything that they told us about how we have to switch off of gas-guzzling cars and switch to EVs, now they've just decided to change their position on that, and now they're coming after the EV owners for either higher tabs or a per-mileage tax that they want you to pay because that road usage charge, a.k.a. the paper-mile tax, that is coming. So they're going to get you one way or the other if you're driving an EV or not.
My nephew in Orlando, 55, so he's not young, but homeowner, business owner, and he said, Uncle Mark, he said, you couldn't believe all the EVs sitting along the highways here with all the flooding and the big storms we had. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody had to evacuate. But you think you can get to a charging station to get enough charge to get far away from it?
Yeah.
And everybody just abandoned all these new vehicles, and there they sit.
Yeah. And an EV, it has limitations. The power goes out, boom, you can't drive it. So like we were talking a few minutes ago about the natural gas ban the King County judge ruled on last Friday, and the bomb cyclone that kept people without power out in areas of Issaquah or Hobart or the Sammamish Plateau for a week, you know, that's a problem. And that's why we feel like the natural gas access should be something that the state of Washington should be able to choose from. But pro-choice Democrats don't want you to be able to choose. Okay. Rant concluded. We'll do the social media sweep, the socialists on social media coming up next. And then at 8:35, that interview with the state Republican Party chair, Jim Walsh. He's been instrumental in passing Initiative 2066, which was struck down by a judge last Friday. That whole access to natural gas is now in limbo across Washington. So we'll get you updated on that story coming up at the bottom of the hour as we sit in for John Carlson here on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Scouring the latest news and views from around the sound and beyond, it's the Social Media Sweep on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
I can't think it'll look like
March
April tomorrow.
24.
70-degree weather tomorrow. Watch what happens after all your deal today in the clouds and maybe some showers, but showers most of which during the morning.
Mark Christopher there and me, Phil Vandervoort. We're sitting in for John Carlson this morning. John will be back tomorrow. John's just taking a day off to make it a three-day weekend. Let's hit the social media sweep. Sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort, on Friday, President Trump announced that Boeing has won the military contract for the next U.S. fighter jet, military fighter jet. And he announced that it will be called F-47. The fighter jet F is the designation for a fighter jet F, and 47 would be the model. And Trump had said during the Oval Office announcement about this, F-47, the generals picked the title. But, of course, Donald Trump has been both the 45th and 47th president. So a lot of people were looking at that. And one of the Trump haters on social media, just some rando guy, he quotes, F-47, the generals picked that title, attributing that comment to what Trump said in the Oval Office announcement last week. And the guy writes, of all the things that never happened, and I thought, you know, that's brilliant. If we could just have a few more Trump critics complain about things that never happened, like, you know, the COVID origin or the Russian collusion on the election with Trump or the Hunter Biden laptop is Russian disinformation. Yeah. If we could just have a few more Trump critics complain about things that never happened, that would be great. Okay, we're getting ready for an interview guest with the state representative, Jim Walsh. He's the state Republican Party chair. He was intrinsic in the passage of Initiative 2066, which dealt with keeping available access to natural gas in building construction. It was passed by voters back in November. It was called Initiative 2066. It was one of the four initiatives up for statewide vote that did pass, but now a King County judge has invalidated that, saying that Initiative 2066 is unconstitutional. So democracy is out the window. It's being ruled unconstitutional on a technicality. We will hear from State Rep Jim Walsh, the Republican Party chair, about what happened with this ruling and where it goes from here, if this is going to continue to be a ban on natural gas going forward, or if there is a legal appeal to be made for Initiative 2066. Grays Harbor County, Jim Walsh. Representative Walsh, Chairman Walsh, thank you for jumping on because you were an important part of Initiative 2066 passing. You were a sponsor, were you not?
I didn't write it, Phil, supported it.
Okay.
And it was based in part on some work I had done to try to protect natural gas.
And Let's Go Washington was kind of the other group that was basically pushing the whole effort to try and get Initiative 2066 signatures and then ultimately to encourage voters to vote for it, which it did, and it passed. So on Friday, King County Superior Court Judge Sandra Woodland ended up invalidating this. And
that's correct.
Yeah. So what's so confounding is that it seems to come down on technicality that this is basically being couched as violating the single subject rule.
Correct. Correct. This Seattle left-wing judge put this ruling out on Friday, and I can't say it's a surprise, but there are some major problems with her opinion and her statements about Initiative 2066. So 2066 protects the choice of putting natural gas in new homes and new business buildings, and basically keeps natural gas available as an option for people in Washington state. There are people on the environmental left who want to get rid of natural gas, ban it, mm-hmm. make it
right. It's a fossil fuel, it's bad, full stop, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And which is really weird because a few years ago, these same groups were defending natural gas as a clean energy option. Mm-hmm. So Their priorities kind of shift with the wind, but they don't like natural gas. 2066 says, no, you can have natural gas in new buildings. We're not going to restrict it. And this Seattle left-wing judge put out this opinion on Friday saying that the initiative violates the state's single-subject rule. Now, this is implied, the single-subject rule is implied by the Constitution, although not said explicitly, and then it's been made more explicit in other levels of law in the state. And it's a long tradition. Initiatives have to deal with one issue at a time. You can't do multiple things with an initiative. And so she's using that argument, saying that 2066 did too much, that it didn't just protect natural gas. It changed the building codes and it did other things. And the defenders of 2066 say, well, yeah, all that stuff is part of defending natural gas. The single subject is keep natural gas available for homes and businesses. And the opinion that she offered on Friday is really based almost word for word on a letter that a group called the Pacifica Law Group, which is a left-wing activist law firm in Seattle, had sent to the state attorney general right after Initiative 2066 passed last fall.
Okay.
And that's kind of surprising because, I mean, usually they'll change up some of the lingo language a little bit, a judge, to seem independent. But this woman just really almost verbatim repeated what this Pacifica Law Group said in its letter that was the first step in challenging the initiative. And the other thing that was troubling, Phil, is Jay Inslee was in the courtroom on Friday.
Right.
And he, of course, is a big radical greenie guy. Yeah, you know, he thinks it's his great legacy.
He was the one that wanted to get rid of natural gas.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, how did he know that the opinion was going to go in his favor ahead of time to be there?
Yeah, it does make you wonder, right?
This lady judge, and then it's come out after a couple of groups have looked into public records through the Public Disclosure Commission here in Washington at this lady judge's political contributions.
Yeah, I have that list in front of me. Let me share a little bit with the group Doge Washington and Brandy Cruz, podcast host Brandy Cruz, have reposted this list of donations made by Sandra Widlin, W-I-D-L-A-N is the last name, ranging from 2012 to 2024. And the donation amounts are anywhere from, $43 is the lowest one, up to $700 is one of the highest ones. So these are $100 here, $125 there, $250 there. Let me give you some of the names of candidates that this King County judge that made this ruling on Initiative 26 has donated to. Bob Ferguson, James Dow Constantine, that would be the King County executive. Pramila Jayapal, that would be the U.S. Congresswoman from Seattle. Lorena Gonzalez, a council member, tried to run for Seattle mayor. Jay Inslee is someone that she contributed to in 2016. Jenny Durkin, who is a former Seattle mayor. Patty Kutterer, who is Patty Kutterer a state senator or a state rep from Mercer Island?
She was a state senator. She's now the state's insurance commissioner.
That's right. That's right. But that was in 2017. Patty Kutterer gotten a donation from the judge. Monka Dingra, state senator from Redmond. A couple more for Dow Constantine in 2017. Another one for Lorena Gonzalez in 2021. So those are some of the names that I think our regular KVI listeners would know. But there are a handful of others to candidates that have a much lower profile. So I will ask you this question. Talking to State Rep Jim Walsh, he's the State Republican Party chair. We end up with a judge that has given contributions to Jay Inslee, who was basically the godfather of this ban on natural gas in this state that Initiative 2066 sought to overturn, and the voters did overturn it. When is it necessary for a judge to recuse oneself from a case after giving political campaign contributions? And I'll add that Dow Constantine, who this judge has apparently given donations to, King County executive, King County joined this lawsuit, so did the city of Seattle.
Yeah, Dow Constantine in his capacity as executive of King County was a party in the lawsuit to overturn the initiative and ban natural gas. It's definitely a bad optic, Phil.
Sure
if
is.
I were
that's the best
judge,
case scenario.
I would have recused myself. Yeah,
right?
Truly.
Yeah.
And the idea of, now this is not law. Most of the rules around recusal aren't law.
Right.
They're the ethics rules for lawyers and judges. So she didn't break the law. You can't say that. But the spirit of the ethics rules is to avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest, avoid the appearance of impropriety so as not to weaken the people's trust in the court system. And that's a good thing. Okay, fine. Strictly speaking, what this lady judge is likely to say is, well, I stopped making those contributions just very recently.
Well, the latest one attributed on this list that podcast host Brandy Cruz had posted, 2024. Now, it's not to one of the people directly involed in the lawsuit at this hour, but, you know, the more recent one is 2017 for Dow Constantine. So
correct. Yeah. Well, I'm sure her answer will be, well, just recently, I stopped doing that. So there was no conflict of interest. Now, again, if the spirit of the ethics rules is to avoid the appearance of conflict, then she should have recused herself.
Jim Walsh,
and the fact that
go ahead and finish the thought, then I got a question. Go ahead.
And the fact that Jay Inslee was sitting there with his dopey grin on his face in the courtroom
last Friday
while this lady judge parroted the Pacifica Law Group's words makes the whole thing stink. It doesn't pass the smell test at all.
Yeah. So, Jim Walsh, good that you're here. It's Mark Christopher, part of the Carlson crew. Customer of natural gas for years and years and years and years. And chiming in with some of the listeners who've shared some notes this morning, some listeners saying, you know, I haven't voted in years. I vote on this thing, and now it's just like, why do I even vote ever again? Should we be worried as gas customers? I mean, this is kind of a rare thing. I've never heard of anything of it, and some of our listeners are like, this is kind of a strange thing. How do you keep it positive for us on this?
Well, there's going to be an instant appeal of this lady judge's opinion to the state Supreme Court, and that's almost standard in these things. So let's not overreact. This is one judge's opinion, and there's a lot of bad optics around it that the judges on the higher levels of the court system are probably going to be aware of. Even if she didn't recuse herself, the calls that she should have are going to taint her opinion, and the appeals court, and in this case, it's going directly to the state Supreme Court. So the judges there are going to have to be aware of all that was going on in the lower court.
And Representative Walsh, I was going to say, I want to kind of get to that heart of that issue. The Building Industry Association of Washington is going to appeal this King County Judges Court ruling. And like you just indicated, this goes to the state Supreme Court. The way, and this is the way that the King County judge has indicated the initiative 2066 is unconstitutional, and it was framed as the way the initiative was written runs afoul of the state constitution. So if this goes to the state Supreme Court, what does that mean at the state Supreme Court when the state Supreme Court itself ruled that a capital gains income tax, despite the prohibition in our state constitution that says there are no state income taxes in this state, they ignored that, and they kind of made up their ruling despite that prohibition in the state constitution. What does that make you expect, or what does that make you think might happen at the state Supreme Court for Initiative 2066?
Well, I'm going to remain open-minded about it, though. I mean, I think we need to give them the chance to really do the right thing and see that the lower court judge's opinion is tainted, and that her argument based on this Pacifica Law Group's letter about 2066 doing too many things is wrong, and that while it does several things in the law, it all the things it does are wrapped around the single subject of protecting natural gas in new homes and businesses. So you can play these games a number of ways. You can parse the words a number of ways, but I think that this lower court ruling is weak enough, and the circumstances with Grin and Jay sitting in the courtroom are frankly dodgy enough that the judges on the state Supreme Court are really going to be hesitant to look like they're rubber stamping a bad decision.
Well,
let's see what they say.
Yeah, I appreciate that optimism. And, you know, I mean, the other part of this just kind of basically getting thrown out on a technicality comes down to something you were sort of just referencing, that spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. And that, I think, is what's so agonizing for people that are trying to push back on the majority Democrats that pushed too far in the first place in this system of checks and balances with the legislature and the initiative process.
The initiative process is an essential part of our democracy. And we hear the environmental left screaming all the time about our democracy, yet we have one of the clearest, strongest tools of democratic voice in our republic in the initiative process, and the environmental left doesn't give a fig about that. In fact, they don't want it. They were talking about getting rid of initiatives if they could. So we know that the environmental radicals don't want the initiative process to exist.
Yeah.
Who've actually read the Constitution will defend the initiative process, and we will go down swinging on this. But I don't think we're going to go down, Phil.
Yep.
I think the people will defend the initiative process.
Well, yeah, and maybe an outsized amount of public reaction about the questionable ruling by this King County Superior Court judge. Maybe that will build up enough public pressure, enough profile that Supreme Court justices on the state Supreme Court will give this the due scrutiny it deserves and basically uphold democracy and not go down this path of throwing it out on a technicality.
Agreed. Let's give them the chance to do the right thing. And if they don't, then there will be a strong response from the people of Washington.
Yeah, and this is maybe the other time to remind everybody that this is why it's so important to participate and do everything you can to help out in all the other ordinary election issues so that we get a better balance of power down in the state legislature so that Democrats don't have uniparty control of the legislature and the governor's office and pass ludicrous bans like this natural gas ban that got passed in the first place that led to Initiative 2066.
That's correct. Right. We need more rational, common sense people at all levels of government, including in Olympia.
And the people show it by signing up to support Initiative 2066, getting on the ballot and getting it passed. And now we just kind of got to do that in the bigger application of all the elections that I was just referencing. State Representative Jim Walsh, he's the state Republican Party chair as well. Jim, thank you very much for your time this morning and reacting to Initiative 2066 being struck down by this King County judge last Friday. So Daniel Spoiler Giffen arrested to date.